Good evening. This is pretty personal stuff that we do here, sitting on our cushion, meeting our mind over and over again, moment after moment, Wednesday after Wednesday, day after day. Pretty intimate stuff that nobody really has that experience that we have. Maybe collectively, but I'm thinking personally, we barely have an idea of what got us here in the first place. We might know a few of the causes and conditions that made us interested in this practice, but we all realize that there were myriads of causes and conditions that have been jostling us towards this door for decades or maybe even generations. So nobody really has had the same experience on the cushion that we've had. And yet this very personal, intimate experience we're having, we do it to save all beings. We do it for the liberation of all beings. Imagine that. Charlie and I went to see a movie last night, a documentary on Yo-Yo Ma and the orchestra, the band of musicians that he put together to express the music of the Silk Road. It's called the Silk Road Ensemble. And it's filled with people from different countries and different cultures playing instruments that we've never heard of, that are of the same caliber of musician as Yo-Yo Ma, but we've never heard of them. We don't even know the name of their instrument or what it sounds like. This Persian Comanche player said, you know, nobody knows the experience I've had studying this instrument. He was already a Comanche prodigy when he left Persia during their first revolution, or the revolution in our lifetime, when the Shah of Iran was overthrown. And he left at age 17. All he had was a backpack filled with his underwear and his Comanche. And he spent the next few decades driving a taxi in New York City. And he said, nobody knows my experience, you know, with this instrument. And interestingly, we had a similar conversation before seeing that movie. In our in our Tuesday morning class talking about articles on meditation here. And it was Charlie again who said, what is that original self that we are sitting with? And, you know, for this Persian musician, you know, perhaps his experience was all of Persian culture itself, not just this 17-year-old prodigy, but maybe his experience playing that instrument was his experience of all of Persia, all of Persian culture. This movie talked a lot about culture and music. You know, in this movie he didn't say, this is my experience of all those years of study. He just says, nobody knows it. And yet, we got an idea, maybe, or we had some experience listening to him play the instrument and listening to the other musicians play their instruments, you know, as an ensemble. There was a pipa prodigy from China who, it's sort of a lute-like instrument. The Comanche is kind of a bowed violin-type instrument, but the pipa is a lute-like guitar-strummed instrument. She found herself as a young person in San Diego, and there were a few more Chinese people in San Diego, so she could actually support herself playing the pipa. But she said she spent many years playing it in the back of Chinese vegetable stores, you know, where Chinese people had gathered and were willing to pay her to hear this classical instrument of China. So nobody knows the experience that we just had on the cushion these last 40 minutes, this very personal, intimate experience with our mind. It wasn't just about us. Maybe we felt a little expansive. Maybe we were able to remember our complete self sitting here on the cushion. I started thinking of this subject, of this very personal, intimate practice that we do, reading a lecture of Catherine Thanis. I was reading it on the occasion of the 4-year anniversary of her passing. Years ago, she and a student compiled this thin volume. I think there's 17 lectures here. This was in the late 90s. It was all put together. And so it's a nice reference for some of her, some of her lectures. This one is called This Very Mind is Buddha, written in 96, and a similar one in a few months later in 97. Realizing you are Buddha is a very sobering experience. This wasn't exactly the Buddha you had in mind when you came to practice. Maybe you were looking for another Buddha, maybe that 16-foot golden body. Yet at some point, we come to realize the Buddha body we are seeking is inside, not somewhere else. Take the backward step and turn your light inward to illuminate yourself, Dogen says. Catherine says, illuminate the mind that doubts itself, that contradicts itself, equivocates. Illuminate that mind. Instead of avoiding it or being pushed around by it, illuminate it. Open up into that mind. That is the mind of reality itself that is actualizing itself. Open up into that mind. That is the mind itself actualizing itself. You know, when you start looking at something and studying something, everything in the universe starts reminding you of that. Every movie that you go to becomes a Buddhist movie. I tease Kokyo about the choices he makes for the movie nights that he has in the house, and yet it's true. And every movie is a Buddhist movie. This line in the movie we saw last night jumped right out at me. I went to the Santa Cruz, what's it called, chorus, chorale, Santa Cruz chorale. The other weekend, this was a piece that they sang by Heinrich Schütz, who lived around 1648, and the words were from the book of Job. And in my own flesh I shall see God for myself. I shall gaze upon him, and mine eyes shall behold him. This will be I gazing upon him and none other. This will be I who am no stranger to him. So in my own flesh I'll see God. That's not a whole lot different than this is the mind of reality itself. We come to realize the Buddha body we are seeking is inside. That's not so different. That's about the same. In my own flesh, I'll see God for myself. Maybe I'll save this till later. This poem. This busy mind, sometimes clear, sometimes conflicted, is the human condition. We live in this mind with everyone, and the strength of practice is that we finally come to realize this, that this is actually the mind of everyone. Catherine says, we live in this mind with everyone. And the strength of practice is that we finally come to realize this. When we realize we are Buddha, we find everyone else is also Buddha. Generosity and kindness come forth. The person who irritates you, this person is also Buddha. Regardless of the disguise we may be wearing, we are always a complete expression of the perfect reality. We're all the same Buddha clan. There is no one that we can toss out. So this... maybe sometime in our 40 minutes on the cushion, maybe for a breath here or a breath there, or a couple breaths in a row, when our mind is still enough, we can illuminate the complete our complete mind, not just the mind that's easy to quiet down, but as Catherine said, I can't see anything. As Catherine said, illuminate the mind that doubts, that contradicts, that equivocates, instead of avoiding it or being pushed around by it, open up to it. So maybe we can quiet down some of our mind, but for a moment here and there, maybe we can actually look at that mind that's a little harder to control, that we want to run away from, that pushes us around. Maybe we can at least touch it, or maybe we can at least sit with that for a moment. And that can, as Catherine said, it open up into that mind. Maybe we are open to that, or we can open to that mind a little bit and start feeling a little more expansive, because this dharma that illuminates us is finally getting into those dark corners, into those dark cracks. Maybe finally that hungry ghost is showing up to the table to receive the offerings. Maybe for a few minutes, for a few breaths every period, we can illuminate that mind. Catherine says, it takes a lot of courage and fearlessness to face this mind. She says, stop veering off, stop running away from it. You have to go into it. You take a little step toward it, then take another little step. You go as slowly as you need to. Once again, everything looks like everything else. This we just read this Tuesday morning, this commentary on polishing the tile. You know, this koan that's about where we sit here. Maybe we sit here in our meditation, polishing this brick, this tile, so it shines like a Buddha, like the Buddha mirror. So it shines like the Buddha mirror. Therefore, when the brick is a mirror, I am Buddha. This is, I'm paraphrasing here. When I am Buddha, I am at once myself. And when I am myself, this Zazen is immediately Zazen. the truth of this Dharma fills your body and mind, yet it is not manifest without practice, nor is it realized without enlightenment. Unless you are prepared to move forward and take risks, the truth of your life and that of the universe is never realized as this very life itself. Unless you are prepared to move forward and take risks, the truth of your life and that of the universe, the truth of the universe is never realized as this very life itself. Kofu spoke a few weeks ago about our practice seems to be right on that risky edge. Maybe our practice starts off at 5:45. After a hard day, and it feels really good to just be in this quiet, dimly lit room and settle down and let go of the thoughts of our day. But that's not exactly the risk-taking. You know, that gets us here. I'm not putting that down. I'm glad we chose that practice to kind of help us with the end of the day. But that's not the risk taking. That's not Dharma filling up our body and mind. That's not. It takes a lot of courage and fearlessness to experience the reality of the universe as this very life. Go slowly. There's things in my life that I've done that still make me cringe, and I don't want to go there. It's not like I can put it to rest. I don't even have to talk about it. I don't even have to confess these sins to you. Because, you know, I just don't talk about them. It's fine. And, we get along just fine if I don't confess it. But it's not like that puts it away forever. You know, it burbles up. You know, here the causes and conditions, you know, happen, and it burbles up right there, and it makes me cringe. Those are the things that, as Catherine says, I have to move slowly. I have to be able to touch that. I have to take some risks. I'll just sit with that a little bit. I'll just sit with it. Because it's still pushing me around. I've got to let that illuminating light of Dharma touch that. Or I'll never know, or I'll never experience the reality of this universe. That is this life itself, this very life. I've been in therapy every week for a year since I was attacked over at my house, and it's very good. It's remarkable. I'm sounding like Donald Trump. It's really remarkable therapy. I've done remarkable work. This therapist is excellent. Is remarkable. But, you know, I can't go some places. I can't touch some things. And I'm going to have to be able to sit with that. Like, maybe just like, you know, like I'm sitting next to you all. I'm going to have to be able to sit with some of those thoughts and memories and feelings if I'm going to experience the universe, the reality of this universe as my life itself. I think we have to go there. Catherine says, we have to open up into that mind. We have to open our hearts. We have to go there with the greatest compassion for all of these hungry ghosts that are nothing but our life itself, are nothing but the mind and body of Buddha. And so we can sit here and try to you know, if I know that I can only touch these parts of my life with this open, compassionate heart. I've turned it around a little bit. Catherine says we have to open up to that mind. No, she says that we have to open up with compassion. And then she says in the next paragraph, that just by going there, generosity and compassion come forth. So it's this two-way street, this two-way. If we say, okay, my heart is open enough that I can go touch that. You know, it's arisen. It's not like I'm calling it forth. You know, this period on July 6th is when I'm going to tackle this. It comes up, and can I meet it with an open heart? And I have to have a little bit of what we talked yesterday morning about confidence, that we have to have a little confidence that this practice also, that what if we do take those risks, that we're going to also meet compassion and generosity. So I think that's another part of the two-way street, that I can sit here and bat it away for the whole 40 minutes. But if I have a little confidence in this practice, that you know, if I can just sit with a few things, that I might meet compassion and generosity itself. So that's the confidence that we talked about yesterday morning. So you know, how do we do that? We experience confidence, or we have confidence in this practice by doing the practice. And you know, everybody here has been practicing a very long time. So some confidence, some trust in this practice, I think has already been experienced by you. I think you trust this practice again and again, Wednesday after Wednesday, morning after morning. Sometimes, if I'm really feeling aversion to what's coming up, I can chant a little loving kindness chant, you know. May I be filled with loving kindness. May I be well. May I be peaceful and at ease. That I can sometimes greet my mind with kindness that way. From the viewpoint of liberation, Catherine says, these thoughts, these habits, this doubtful mind, this fearful mind, these prejudices, they just arise. No one invites them. They arise according to causes and conditions. Who knows what causes and conditions cause some of these thoughts to come up in us? They arise according to causes and conditions. No one invites them. Because of their inherent dependence on causes and conditions, these thoughts are not self. Each moment thus arises simultaneously as not self, simultaneously as self. What we're studying is the mind, not my mind, but the mind that's arising now as me. When I can hear and accept everything that's going on in my mind, I can hear and accept everything that's going on in everyone's mind. Nothing is outside my mind. In that mind, there is no pressure to improve myself. That, you know, I don't have to sort of say to myself, I wish I hadn't have done that. I wish I hadn't have said that to that person. If I sat better, maybe I wouldn't still be thinking of this. There's no pressure to improve. It is to be, quote, without anxiety about non-perfection, as the Dhammapada says. To be without anxiety about non-perfection. So we can generate that compassion, you know, by that mantra. Maybe I remember a month or so ago, I was flying up to Salem, Oregon to see my old high school friend. You know, this is 44 years ago and then I knew him all through high school. So we've known each other for 45, 47 years. And we've stayed in touch. He comes down here, I go up there. But it's always a great visit. So I just that plane ride. I was really, really kind of enjoying myself, and had this big open heart. This old friend of mine, you know, he doesn't care. I mean, he knows a lot of the things that I am too ashamed to voice. I mean, he was there. So, you know, it's that, no anxiety about non-perfection. You know, just that makes my heart willing to open up and accept a little more. And it's the same, I could tell you stories about him, but none of that is really important. So I was really anticipating this great visit, and it was a great weekend. I mean, he planned the weekend, what we were going to do, and I've been up there before. There's certain things in Salem and Portland that I like doing, but whatever he planned was going to be fine with me. And as a matter of fact, we had to do some household repairs that turned out to be kind of fun. I wouldn't have said, gee, I always like going up to Salem so I can fix your sink. This is kind of like a guided meditation. You know, I just remembered this kind of open heart the whole time. And so what if I, sitting on the cushion and wanted to sit 40 minutes with a mind and heart that could be open up into this mind. You know, I might do this guided meditation of this guided compassion meditation of, you know, can I imagine anticipating this weekend with this old friend and what we might do and how we might be together. And there would be no fear on my part that he would be judgmental about my non-perfection, and he would have no fear that I would be judgmental about his non-perfection. And could I just be with that heart, and maybe after a few minutes of being there, I could let that visualization go and just feel, you know, the openness in my heart. You know, once we, I think, are in that body and mind, we can sustain it without any real object. We can just be there. And maybe then, if causes and conditions came up of things that were hard to touch, that really needed the illumination of Dharma on it, maybe I could touch it. Maybe I could touch it a little bit more. What would it be like to sit in Zazen and really go beyond? Dogen says that reality is about going beyond. What is this? What would it be like to sit in Zazen and go beyond? Think non-thoughts. As soon as they arise, they dissolve and leave no trace. All these thoughts you have been having about your knees, about how well you're sitting, about your family, your job, all these worries, about these regrets, as soon as these thoughts come up, they can pass. Nothing hooks them. So there's something about this mind of compassion, you know, compassion. We read in here someplace within the last few weeks, compassion is the activity of wisdom. I like that line too. So this mind and body of wisdom and compassion somehow unhooks us from getting stuck in these habitual mind patterns, these habitual fears. You know, maybe we're not so fearful. Maybe then when we're not hooked, you know, when we let go of that, what are those hooks that you pound into mountains when you're climbing? Crampons?
Pitons.
Maybe we can just unhook those and go a little deeper. Unhooked. The Lotus Sutra, as we'll remember, says Buddhas only come into this world to liberate suffering. So this, you know, when this thought comes up that's so hot, that's so hard to touch, that we just want to get it out, that's where Buddhas, that's where our Buddha mind is going to come up. And if we've generated that body and mind of compassion, if we've gone there, maybe we can sit with that hungry ghost that is no other than me. Maybe we can sit with it just a little longer. Samantabhadra in the Lotus Sutra is riding this elephant that is moving so slowly, very slowly, seven legs, six tusks, just moving all over very slowly. The Lotus Sutra says the elephant walks slowly and carefully. That's the mind that Dogen says, this study of this of Buddhism is the study of the self. That's how we approach these red hot topics, these red hot frames of mind, these red hot hungry ghosts of ours. We just go there very slowly so we don't get burnt, and maybe we can unhook the places where we're stuck, unhook those pitons. So that we can sit a little longer with that heat. Maybe when we're not so afraid, when we're a little more fearless, we can, from the distance, hear Comanche. We can hear all of Persia, and all of Persia is going to help us sit just a little longer and illuminate those dark areas that will allow us to have the finally to know the reality of the universe is nothing but our lives. So maybe you were all listening to Persian music in the last 40 minutes. Or you all, have these hungry ghosts that visit you because of causes and conditions over and over again. Catherine says, this is Buddha mind. And that we have to be fearless, and we can take our time, just like Samantabhadra on that white elephant. We can take our time. We can just sit there. Kokyo says that our Buddhist practice is we've got to move a little closer to the edge. We've got to move a little closer to the edge. Take a few risks. So maybe a few others have. There's risky business in this practice. Richard.
You're making me think when you say the number of pitons of that line of falling, the bird learns how to fly.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice and
to me. Yeah, there's maybe when you're in that uncharted territory, you'll meet other causes and conditions, or you'll be even more confident. You'll experience confidence that you've never known before, because you've never had to. Thank you. Nettie.
Thinking about taking risks, approaching things that are hard or difficult, and as well as doing that in about things in my personal life, doing that for the teachings as well, there'll be a line that I kind of don't like in one of the sutras maybe, or it's just either I find it annoying, maybe, or I just don't get it, so my mind glazes across it, and I just go, blah, 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 there's the line I like.
Yeah.
Blah, 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 blah. And approaching those spots. Being willing to be curious and courageous to say, I just don't know what Jovan's talking about here. But just like you say, doing it gently, like a resolving, you don't have to like grab it. Just being open to saying, I don't understand this teaching, or this particular part of the teaching somehow doesn't feel right. I've got a kind of a yes but energy that comes up in me, yeah, but what about, sort of like a resistance.
Mm-hmm.
Just being curious about what's
that about. Yeah. And why did that silly little line jump out at me in the 400 pages of the Lotus Sutra? The elephant walks carefully and slowly. I certainly must have read it before, you know, in the times that we've studied it here all together, and yet at some point it just became, oh yeah, that's what it all means.
Most fruitful when I pay attention to parts of the teachings that I don't have an immediate affinity with.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I think my practice has deepened, and I've been willing to do that.
Yeah, that's good. Let's shine the light on this part. It wasn't just a filler when he wrote it. Certainly he had an idea, you know, that it should have some meaning for us. Let me see if I can meet Dogen's mind. Yeah, thank you. This is short here. There's still time for another comment or two, but you know, everything becomes a Buddhist lesson. This poem came out of what does Garrison Keillor do? The Writer's Almanac, that 3 minutes of poetry each morning and evening. This is a poem by American poet William Stafford. He wrote in the first half of the 20th century. For my young friends who are afraid, this is about fearlessness. There is a country to cross, you will find in the corner of your eye, in the quick slip of your foot, air far down, a snap that might have caught. This is like the hooks. There's something that this country, small, but this little hook, you've got to look at that little bit that I'm still hooked by. There is a country to cross, you will find just in the corner of your eye, in the quick slip of your foot, air far down, a snap that might have caught. And maybe for you, for me, a high passing voice that finds its way by being afraid. That country is there for us, carried as it is crossed. What you fear will not go away. It will take you into yourself and bless you and keep you. That's the world, and we all live there. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's, you think William Stafford read Dogen? You think William Stafford, you think Catherine read William Stafford when she says, you've got to be fearless because that's your fear will take you into yourself and bless you. And that's the world. That's the reality of the universe that is nothing other than this body and mind. Wow. Joyce.
It reminds me of Dr. Seuss's All the Places That You'll Go.
I don't know that one. Did it have green eggs and ham in it? I don't
know. Over and climb and opens up into something else, mm-hmm. and it just expands it.
Hmm.
And so yeah. It's... Are you often in your places?
What's the name of that one?
The places that you'll go and not pursue.
Oh, thank you.
It's a lot of leaders. Like I said, typically it's given to high school or college graduates as they embark.
Oh, nice, nice. What was his name, Theodore? What was Dr. Seuss's real name? He may have read William Stafford. They were both around the first half of last century. He may have read William Stafford. Well, thank you. May the merit of risking, touching those hot, fearful places lead us to the ongoing benefit of all beings. Being